Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Chicago's Legal Latte, a series of podcasts brought to you by Lavelle Law Limited. Throughout this series, the attorneys from Lavelle Law will share their answers to questions about a variety of topics for individuals and small businesses. To participate in today's discussion, you can email us at podcast@lavellelaw.com.
And whether you're listening live or enjoying a download of our discussion, welcome back to Chicago's Legal Latte. We're always pleased to have you listening, regardless of where or when you're able to join us. That's one of the reasons we post these podcasts out there for people to take a listen to at their convenience at the time that's appropriate. So welcome back. Hi, everybody. This is Jim Mitchell. Always good to be here for another discussion of legal topics. This week, my guest will be attorney Sammy Azari, and Sammy and I are going to discuss the penalties associated with the crime of shoplifting. Now, the reason we want to get into this conversation is that we think that the penalties can be more intense than some people might anticipate. So this is not just a minor crime if found guilty, but we're going to get into some detail. So let's first start by saying hello to Sammy. It's been a while, so welcome back.
Well, thank you for having me.
Now, when I saw this topic, I assumed we were looking at the scenario in which somebody grabs an item off a shelf, tries to hide it in their coat or a bag and walk away with it. But in reviewing some of the notes, it certainly looks like the definition of shoplifting really covers a lot more scenarios than just that one, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, the crime that you get arrested for is retail theft, which is kind of an overarching term, and it's used to cover several different things that someone might do. The most common one of those is shoplifting. That's when someone just takes an item off the shelf, sticks it in their coat pocket, and walks out the store. Some other ones include, changing the price tags or underringing. That would be for somebody that actually works in the store, making false returns, or anyone using any kind of jamming device to jam the alarm from going off. So those would all be scenarios that someone would get arrested for retail theft.
Yeah, well, let's talk about some of those and kind of get an understanding, and then we'll talk about some of the penalties and other things associated with them. You said that shoplifting is the most common. You mentioned switching tags. What's involved with tag switching? As simple as it sounds, people somehow have manufactured tags and try and swap them at the checkout?
Or they swap them with items that are in the store that are cheaper. So let's say there's an $80, pair of gloves, and there's another $20 pair of gloves. I'd switch the $80 price tag with the $20 price tag. So that way I'm paying $20 for the more expensive item. That, sounds easy to do, but it's also easy to get caught.
Yeah, I would think with inventory systems and computer records the way they are, that'd probably be certainly one that would be a little more difficult to get away with.
Right.
Now, you mentioned underringing, and I think you alluded to the fact something I was going to ask about, which is, that sounds to me like an instance that would have to directly involve an employee of the store.
Correct. It's usually, in the cases that I've represented people, it's been an employee of the store, and they're trying to do a favor for a friend, so they're ringing up an item for less than it really is. Either they're ringing an incorrect item, or they're manually changing the automatic price that's rung up when it's scanned by doing a manual override for a less expensive price. And that would involve, basically an employee of the store doing it for a friend. They're just doing it because, they're a disgruntled employee or something like that. And that's, a very common scenario.
And I assume a lot of these things get, so many of these stores now have security systems. They've got security checks, cameras. Even if, someone attempts to swap a tag or underring, if they don't get caught at that moment, there's probably a process in place that's going to catch up with them eventually. Is that right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, everything's recorded, and stores have some precautions now where they're, making sure of the item that's scanned, and it's recording exactly the item that's scanned, and they do checks with, like you said, inventory to see what's not in the store anymore and what's been scanned out to see where the inconsistency lies. They break it down by checkout counter to see who is working that counter at what particular day, what particular time, and they're getting more advanced with that, so it's pretty easy to find out when it happened and who was working when it happened.
Sure, I mean, just every receipt I can think of has a date and time stamp on it, so that's you know, a pretty good indicator there. We're talking to Attorney Sam Yazari of Lavell Law today. We're sort of digging into criminal law a little bit. The area of concentration is retail theft. And we're shortly going to discuss the penalties that someone who is convicted of this might face. But first, we're talking about a few of the different types of crimes that are associated with retail theft. Sam, are there instances in which people attempt to scam a store with a false return, kind of swapping things that they didn't really buy using a receipt or something along those lines?
Right, and a lot of people wouldn't think of that as retail theft. I mean, ultimately, let's say you never walked into the store, you come across this item, you know, how is it theft if you never walked into the store and took something out? Well, ultimately, a person's guilty of retail theft if they present a receipt or a gift card or other document purporting to show that they're the owner of that property when it's not true, and they return it to get either a cash refund or even store credit or any other kind of exchange. So just because someone didn't walk into a store and remove something isn't a defense to, you know, making a false return. It's a crime as soon as you return something that you know you didn't purchase.
Okay. Now I'm gonna take myself back a few years, more than a few years, I should say, really. I paid my way through school working retail, you know, earning commissions, and I do remember a number of years ago when electronic sensors were first introduced on, apparel items and such, and they're still very prevalent today. Are people finding ways to try and still beat that system one way or another?
They are. The problem is whatever people are thinking of, the security companies thought of, and they find a way to circumvent it. So basically it's retail theft to use any kind of electronic device, such as a jamming device, to pass merchandise through security without the alarm going off. So any way that you're accomplishing that, it's retail theft no matter what means you're trying to use.
Okay. So we've kind of covered the ground here in terms of what different violations can occur. Let's talk about what happens if someone is found guilty of one of these. I guess the first question I have is about, you know, severity. Is it the value of the item that is considered in terms of determining the penalty?
It is, and it used to be a lot worse. Now if the value of the item is $300 or less, then the offense is a Class A misdemeanor. And the typical sentence for that includes up to 1 year in jail and up to a fine of $2,500. If it's more than $300, then you're getting into the felony ranges, and that the class of felony would differ based on the amount above $300.
Yeah, and that's interesting to know that, you know, that $300 may not, there may seem like a lot in some cases, but depending on what someone is grabbing, suddenly you're looking at a felony before too long.
Right, and the unusual thing is, let's say you were to steal a stereo, which are typically more than $300, that's a felony. But let's say you were to steal from, let's say you're at the gym and you see someone's bag and you steal, let's say, $400 or $499 worth of items from that, mm-hmm. That's a misdemeanor. It's not a felony because that's not retail theft, that's just theft. So it's a little bit more stringent to get prosecuted for retail theft than for regular theft for a higher amount.
Now, as you represent people and you've seen these cases, does someone's past record factor into the severity of the sentence at all, if it's a first offense or if something they've been found guilty of before?
Absolutely. In a lot of cases, usually for a misdemeanor offense, especially in Cook County, people are eligible for something called theft school. That's basically, you know, a one-day thing, a few hours, I think up to 4 hours of class that you would go to, and then you'd come back to court and the charge would be dismissed, and then you'd be eligible for an expungement. Now, let's say you're not eligible for theft school if you're second or third offense, then you're talking about getting either a finding of court supervision or a conviction.
Okay, and how severe can the penalties be?
Well, I mean, if it's a felony, it would depend on the price. I mean, ultimately, let's say it's $301, then the defendant can be charged with a Class 4 felony. And this type of felony would have a sentence of 1 to 3 years in prison in the Illinois Department of Corrections and a fine up to $25,000. And what's worse about, regardless of whether it's a conviction for a misdemeanor or a felony, as opposed to a finding of court supervision or getting theft school, at that point, you're talking about something that cannot be expunged or sealed. So good thing if someone's a first offender, if they get the charges dismissed by going to some sort of school or doing some sort of community service and having the charges dismissed, you can get an expungement or seal the record from anyone viewing it, which is a pretty big thing nowadays, especially with the employment rate as low as it is, for people to be able to find jobs and not have any kind of background on them.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's something I want to make sure we kind of make clear here in terms of what you just said. So first time offender with a misdemeanor, and stop me if I'm saying this wrong, would be eligible for some sort of community service or school. In other more severe cases, though, you're not eligible for that. And once that happens, there's no way to get this taken off your record.
If you're convicted, I mean, let's say you're not eligible for the school, but you get court supervision, then it's possible that you're eligible for an expungement. But let's say you get convicted, mm-hmm. as opposed to getting court supervision, then it's going to be extremely difficult, if not impossible, to get an expungement or seal the record. And that conviction can be either a misdemeanor or a felony, and that would likely be on someone's record for the rest of their life.
Well, okay. Now, and I'm guessing here, but it seemed to me that in many of these cases, especially the smaller ones, the person caught in the act is possibly a teenager or someone under the age of 18. Are they treated any differently than an adult would be in these cases?
Typically not. Ultimately, I've represented people that are teenagers and people that are, into their 20s and 30s of committing retail, of being accused of committing retail theft. Penalties are still the same. They're still held to the same standard and still held to the same consequences.
Okay. Now, when we talked about some of the different violations earlier, and we sort of, through the course of the conversation, said, it's kind of hard to get away with this at this point in time, yet people are doing it. With all the electronic records and the security and everything else, when someone is caught, as a defense attorney, what can you really do to help them out? I mean, it seems like a lot of this would be fairly cut and dry.
Well, ultimately, in, let's say, a felony case, the biggest thing at the preliminary hearing is to determine the exact value of the items that were stolen. So if they want to charge them with a felony, they'd have to demonstrate that it was over $300. And a lot of the times, what I have found over the preliminary hearings that I've done is that they're being charged with a felony even though the value of the item was less. So it's important that an attorney catch that, because someone's charged with a felony and it's less, then there's a finding of no probable cause, and ultimately the case will eventually be dismissed entirely as opposed to being reduced to a misdemeanor. So little nuances like that are important for an attorney to catch right away. In other instances, ultimately, it's just going to come down to what's best for the client. Obviously, if they're eligible for theft school, which is going to result in a dismissal, that would always be something that I would tell my client to take or recommend my client to take.
Okay. Well, certainly covered a lot of ground here. Any last thoughts or comments, Sammy, in terms of someone who may find themselves in this situation of being accused? Obviously, get a hold of an attorney right away. Anything else they should be aware of?
Absolutely. Get a hold of an attorney right away, and just make sure that you know where you could have possibly left any kind of, trace of what you did, and let your attorney know that so he can try to formulate the best defense possible right away.
Okay. Well, as always, the folks from Lavelle Law always stop by to help us out, and we appreciate that. Certainly thank Sammy for being here today for a very, very informative discussion. You can learn more about the Criminal Defense Practice Group at Lavelle Law, as well as all the other groups there, by visiting lavellelaw.com. And while you're there, you can also search through all of our previous podcasts. They're all stored there, as they are here at Blog Talk Radio and iTunes. So grab one that looks interesting, and you can download and listen at your convenience. And we, of course, invite you to join us every Tuesday, 4 o'clock Central, for further discussions. And we hope you'll be here to join us. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us for this edition of Chicago's Legal Latte. If you have any questions or topics for a future episode, please call Lavelle Law Limited at 847-705-7555 or email us at podcast@lavellelaw.com.